Welcome, everybody. It's Friday, October 29th. On today's show, build back blah, more like build back maybe mediocre, maybe at best. President Biden compromises with Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema to deliver a watered-down stimulus plan. We've got all of the details on that.
And Facebook changes its name to Meta. Mark Zuckerberg wants you to forget the transgressions of the past and enter the new metaverse.
Unbelievable. And student loan debt. How bad is it out there for America's young people? We've got an expert on student loans joining us today. We're going to talk about the predatory loan practices and how it affects not only those who borrow the money, but even non-borrowers. All of that and more as Morning Invest starts on this All Hallows Eve.
It's the Eve.
Eve of All Hallows Eve. Morning Invest starts right now. Derek Eads in our chat says, I don't even like that name, Meta, for Facebook.
Oh, we're going to talk about it. Yeah. We have some things to say about that.
We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, everybody. It is a Friday before Halloween. I hope you are rested and ready for a safe weekend. I hope you are also subscribed to the newsletter that gives you a sense of what we're going to talk about each day. It's free to sign up at morninginvest.com. And we put in the newsletter today, especially the information about Facebook, Meta. It's like they're not even trying to pretend that they don't want all of your metadata. It's like, let's just put it out there. This is what we want from you. Yeah. All your metadata.
We want everything you've ever done. And we're even changing our name to reflect that that's what we want from you.
Yeah. So, okay. Now buyer beware, right? Yeah. They told us. So, all right. Then I told Clayton, that's like making, you know, like you're a child predator and your Twitter handle is like @ rapist or something. Like, it's just there. It's just, we agree. This is what Facebook does.
@ pedo.
They rape our metadata. Mm-hmm. We know it.
Facebook. Way to go, Facebook.
We're a data raper.
We've got that. We've got so much on the show today. We're going to be showing you your pet photos a little bit later in the show as well. So I hope you email them into the show during the week. You can email them at pets@morninginvest.com. Make sure if you didn't get them in this week, we'll have them for next Friday. Okay, let's get started with your top story this morning, which is the Build Back Better blah. President Biden announcing yesterday that he's got a plan finally before he left for Rome as part of the COP. What is it called? The COPPA?
COP26.
I can't keep all these names, you know, the G7.
Carbon something.
The COP9.
Yeah. It's like, oh,
COPPA
we're going feel. In there COPPA fix feel. Stuff.
I yeah. went to the COPPA Feel conference.
Did
one
you?
Time. Yeah. Tickets are hard to get.
Okay. And was it legal?
No.
Okay. Thanks for sharing.
But we did lower our carbon footprint by going to the COPPA Feel conference. That's what President Biden is doing right now. He's in Rome. And before he left, of course, he rolled out this new Build Back Better plan that is about half of what he wanted. Here is the President of the United States speaking yesterday, right before he left for the COPPA Feel conference.
We actually reduced the deficit, according to the economists. I want to thank my colleagues in the Congress for their leadership. We spent hours and hours and hours over months and months working on this. No one got everything they wanted, including me. But that's what compromise is. That's consensus. And that's what I ran on. I've long said compromise and consensus are the only way to get big things done in a democracy, important things done for the country. I know it's hard. I know how deeply people feel about the things that they fight for. But this framework includes historic investments in our nation and in our people. Any single element of this framework would be viewed as a fundamental change in America.
Okay.
So
he wants to thank his colleagues, and he says that's compromise. Meanwhile, no Republicans were involved in the filming of this project. No animals were harmed in the filming of this project.
Right,
no
absolutely.
Republicans were involved in the discussion at all. So where's the compromise?
He compromised with his own party.
Right.
Right. And so the plan was to have this ready by the time he departed for Europe. Mm-hmm. It was, but they were trying to vote on it last night. And they did not. Why? Because of what is in the meat and bones of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's kind of a skinny, it's a it's a fat-free latte. It's fat-free milk, right? Like, you're getting something.
Right.
You know what it's been like? Stripped of a lot of the stuff that we thought was going to be in there.
It's like a family that's getting ready to have Thanksgiving, and they're like, okay, who's bringing what food? We're going to all compromise, and somebody's going to bring turkey, and somebody's going to bring potatoes, but they're not going to bring enough for everybody. It's like, I'm going to bring half a turkey, but there's 25 people. Well, we're compromising. Like, we're not bringing the whole thing, so we're just going to have to each pick off a little tiny piece.
It's like that year I forgot the sweet potatoes. Oh, that was my one thing to get. And then we get 2 hours down the road and I'm like, the sweet potatoes, they're in the fridge.
She had like roasted them for 2 days.
Yeah.
And they were in the oven back home where we left.
We did eat them, but
we drove 2 hours.
We had to find some frozen ones.
We ended up getting like frozen, what was it? Like frozen
patties. They were like
patties.
Little medallions. Like that.
Oh,
it was
stupid. It was not good. It was not good.
Yeah. Hey, that's compromise.
That is, right. I suppose, that is not compromise. That is adapting, I suppose.
So let's look at where this thing started, okay? So remember back in June, right? So Democrats are eyeing the $6 trillion plan on infrastructure, Medicare, and immigration, okay? That was in June, right? And then Joe Manchin, Senator Joe Manchin, calls for up to $4 trillion in infrastructure spending as Democrats are poised to control Congress. Remember, this was during the campaign, right? Right? This was them running for all of this, right? Then a little bit later, Biden sets a $1.9 to $2.2 trillion price range for the social safety net in a call with White House in the House progressives. Okay, so it keeps dropping, it keeps dropping. And then yesterday, Biden at the Capitol pitches his $1.75 trillion agenda to unite Democrats.
Okay, but the way that you're reading this, you're kind of poking fun that it's shrunk down.
Yeah.
I understand that.
I'm glad you picked up on that.
But do you think that it should have ever been $6 trillion? We can't even afford $1 trillion.
Well, can we afford, let me.
We can always afford it when it's war.
Exactly. This is over, by the way. This is not in 1 year. This is going to be spread over almost like 10 to 15 years.
Yes.
Okay. So if you add up the $800 billion that we spend per year on bombing and killing brown people in all parts of the world.
But we have not committed to stopping that. So if we continue to, it's like, we got to keep our, you know, subscription to this Netflix of bombing the world.
Okay, so we got to keep that going.
So that is this sort of understanding. I'm not saying we should, right?
No.
But
so what,
under
the American people
budget,
shouldn't get anything. The American
I'm not
people,
saying that either.
The American people shouldn't get anything until we stop all of these wars around the world.
But that's not on the table. Canceling that Netflix subscription has never been on the table.
Well, it was
they
on
need
the
True
table.
Bill.
They need yes. Truebill. Yeah, they need our sponsor Truebill.
I cancel Uganda. I cancel Somalia.
Oh my God, that
I'm
would be great.
Still bombing yeah. them? I didn't.
Did you
know
it. We were?
David didn't even realize he was still bombing Ethiopia. Wow. Thank you. I got rid of this thanks to Truebill. Truebill, please continue to remain a sponsor of our show. You save us money, and you could actually save us from war. So that's absolutely true. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, about a month ago, brought forth a bill on the House of Representatives floor to reduce the military budget by 10%.
Yes.
It wasn't even brought to the floor. It was laughed out of Congress.
No.
So
it
I mean,
was used
it
as
was
toilet
on the
paper.
Table. Yeah. But nevertheless, let's go through exactly what's in this. We had a lot of questions this morning as to what is in this thing. And as President Biden said at the beginning, he didn't get a lot of what he wanted. And I think the American people didn't get a lot of what they wanted. That's why I called this Build Back Blah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Natalie, you have the list here. Let's go through what's in this thing.
Oh, okay. Can you pull it up then full screen? Or okay. would you
yes,
rather not?
I do. Yes. Let's do it.
I can read it. There. But okay. Hopefully you at home can read it. So the bulk of it is going to be child care and preschool, and then home care for elderly people. You're moving it and I can't read it now.
Oh, no. Okay.
Well, go back. Okay. Right. I have it on my own. I have all it on my own screen. Sorry. Let me look at my own notes.
Good idea.
Okay. Child tax and earned income credit was the president had wanted to extend this indefinitely. This is the $500 or per child approximately payment that everyone with children has been getting, plus mm-hmm. the earned income tax credit. Again, he wanted this to be permanent. In the bill now, it goes through the end of next year. And then inevitably, I don't know what, we argue about it again, I suppose. Clean energy and climate investments. Now, there's a different chart that will tell you specifically what this is and what it will offset. We'll get to that next. There's also ACA credits, including in other states, and Medicaid hearing. So these are all sort of medical type expenditures. Housing.
So we do get the hearing tests or the hearing coverage for Medicare.
We will get some of that. Now, I am not, if it's run anything like Medicare Plan D, which is prescription medicine, I am not at all confident that it will be any good or actually provide you with quality, affordable health care. But nevertheless, that is the intention, I suppose.
Sad trombone.
Now, higher ed and workforce. Are we under the impression that this is some type of community college that will be run through federal government? Not sure. Equity and other investments. And then immigration. I'm not sure why that's like under the total in that way. That's unclear. Now, I didn't make this chart. This is from whitehouse.gov.
No, because let me just be clear. If you made the chart, we would understand it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice of you to say that about my Excel skills. Yes.
See, guys, I hope you're paying attention.
This is how you get to the heart of a lady is you compliment her charts.
Compliment her charts.
Yeah.
And her pumpkin soup.
We have a lot of shared spreadsheets, and I'm always telling Clayton, do not change the format. Don't move things around. Don't change the font. Don't change the color.
Yeah.
I would not have put a chart like that. There's actually a pretty good one in the Wall Street Journal, too, that sort of shows where these things are weighted. And again, it's aimed at parents, but there's nothing here for pay parental leave. It's like you get the money for child tax credits and then maybe you pay a babysitter. So we don't value spending time with your own kids, I suppose. I mean, who does, right?
Right, exactly.
Well,
we should talk about some of the things that failed to make it in here.
Okay, all right.
This is in the Washington Post this morning. Many campaign promises fail to make Biden's framework as Democrats begin coming to terms with a shrunken agenda. You don't want like shrunken agenda. That's not a good thing.
Is there a pill for that?
Yeah. The new $1.75 trillion framework in Biden's morning sojourn to the Capitol did not appear to seal a final deal, the Washington Post writes. Besides the prescription drug plan, Democrats have moved to discard plans to raise the corporate tax rate, levy a new wealth tax on the assets of billionaires, implement a new renewable energy program for power utilities. Like, this is supposed to be the big climate, right?
Yes.
He's at the COP whatever conference, and he's there to talk about how America is going to be a leader on climate, right? Democrats control the White House. Democrats control the House. Democrats control the Senate. And this is all we get. A mandate paid sick and family leave gone.
Yes.
And by the way, it's really interesting to see that the person responsible for this is none other than Joe Manchin. And this is an interesting piece in The Guardian this morning. Joe Manchin single-handedly denied U.S. families paid family leave. That's just cruel, writes Joe.
Those senators should not have that much power, period.
Yeah. This one guy, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, says no to paid family leave. The worst in the world. I mean, you think about Europe, you think about the other parts of the world that have at least, we have zero paid family leave.
I don't think he needs to leave and take care of a child anytime soon.
No,
he's not interested in that.
No, but I love how he started out by saying he wanted $4 trillion. And then once they win the election, he's like, I can't even possibly come near this number. You know, I can't get anywhere near this number.
So how are we going to pay for this then? The bill adds 5% income tax to Americans making more than $10 million and another 3% on Americans making more than $25 million. So it is a tax to the millionaires. It is no longer a tax to the trillionaires or billionaires, I suppose. That was
pretty soon we're going to have trillionaires, by the way.
We?
Well, not you and me. I mean,
we are not trillionaires.
We are not trillionaires. But Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk are combined now a trillion. So, hey, they're pretty soon. Who's going to be the first trillionaire? Is it going to be Elon or Jeff Bezos?
I don't know.
I heard that Bezos broke that like at one point. But
I think that it is usually dependent on Amazon's cap rate. And so when it passes a certain threshold, he may have at some point and then come back down. We're going to talk later about Amazon earnings.
You know what I would like to see? You know, Clayton and I, we were talking about how, or I sent you a link. I don't know if you read it, but 9 new billionaires were created during this. 9 new pharmaceutical billionaires were created during this pandemic, right?
Oh my goodness.
I would like to see how many of these senators and congresspeople have benefited during this time with all this stuff. Like, who is paying Senator Manchin for him to deny people medical leave? Like, that makes zero sense. What does it matter to him? That's because somebody paid.
It matters to business that don't want to pay for it because it's expensive, right? To hold a job for someone who's off taking care of a child.
So prescription drugs, I mean, Democrats had an opportunity. They campaign on this stuff, right? They're out there.
Yes, they do. You're right.
They're telling us that, you know, and Bernie Sanders particularly, you know, he was out there. He's telling us, like,
Mr. President, in this moment of
unprecedented
crises.
Sorry.
It's okay.
The Senate must respond.
Yeah. He campaigned on this, lowering prescription drugs.
So do you think he would have been able to do better? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, he wouldn't have. I don't think he would have been sitting there compromising with Joe Manchin. That's for sure.
I think he would have done the executive orders with the things he could have right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he has the opportunity to student loan debt, wipe away student loan debt with an executive order. And he did, you know, and President Biden has not done that, you know,
made marijuana legal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, look at that. Look at Canada, what it's already doing with businesses for CBD and cannabis cultivation. So, yeah.
Now, this bill still could die because the House, like, despite all of this,
lining.
Right?
So Natalie steps in with the silver lining.
The thing is, so I've been comparing it to, like, getting your kids. If you have any more than 2 kids and you try and get them out of the house in the morning, especially in the time, day and age of masks, it's like you can't find your shoes, you can't find your water bottle, you can't find your backpack, you can't find your mask, you can't find your coat, you can't find your snack box. This is what it's been like. Like, you get over here. Oh, are you happy now? Are you set up? Wait, you come back here with, you know,
right.
It's crazy. And so now we could have all of this. Everyone's got their coat on. And it could just not be voted upon because progressives don't like it, right? And it doesn't accomplish, because the point is that if there's so little in the bill for the things that we wanted, right? This much money is not enough money for every pre-K child to have pre-K education. It's not. So who has to compromise? Who will get it? Who will not get it that needs it, right? And so these progressives are saying, no, this is not going to help us. So forget it. So it could be that you suit up all your kids and then you don't get to leave the house.
Oh my God.
Well, that's like, I always ask that question. It's like when they say, hey, this bill is going to benefit and take 50% of children out of poverty. It's like, you're literally looking at 50% of kids. It's like, you've got all these kids standing in this big area and you look at half of them and get, you don't get to eat, but the rest of you, let's go. Yeah.
Yes. Because the details, the devil is in the details. Like, how do you implement this when you cannot afford it for every single person?
I mean, to me, it's a scam. Like, this whole thing is a scam, a sham, whatever you want to say. Like, progressives were calling for, you know, making America competitive so that we could actually afford prescription drugs in the United States. The fact that a huge chunk of people's paychecks go to afford to pay for an inhaler or their medications.
Yes.
Let me know in the chat this morning, everyone watching right now, drop me a comment. Like, how much are you paying per month for medications? And Democrats run the show now. They can't blame Mitch McConnell. They can't blame Republicans. Right. They can't blame Trump for runaway prescription drugs. They can only blame themselves.
And think about that.
For not having this in here.
That's probably a strategy, because if they help 50% of these kids or 50% of these people, there's a voting block that's going to be like, hey, they helped me. Like, they gave me money. I got through this pandemic just fine, while the other 50% didn't. You've got 50% of people now that are happy with what you've done.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and I think President Biden has not shown any leadership on this. I think he's totally punted the ball to moderates in the party.
Mm-hmm. Come on, man.
I'm sorry, but it's true. Absolutely is the case, Joe. And you've had, like, beside the prescription drug plan, you know, you think about the corporate tax rate. So we can't even go back to at least a slight percentage of where we were under the Trump tax cuts. Give me a break. and then implement new renewable energy programs. Like, this is what the progressives have been calling for, a new renewable energy infrastructure in this country. Are you kidding me? We're going to talk about Big Oil in just a second, who got burned in Congress yesterday. Well, it doesn't matter. They can sit there and they can burn Big Oil in front of Congress, but nothing's going to change. I mean, nothing's going to change if these guys don't fix it. What really bothers me, what really chaps my ass in this whole thing, though, is this, is the like paid family leave. And this, and you know, people saying, well, what, do you want to end up like Europe? Yeah, maybe we do want to end up like Europe. Maybe the United States should pay attention to how well families are living in Norway and Europe and all across Europe.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
You remember that?
Yesterday there was a, I want to play this because I'm sort of leading up to this. The author of the book Eurotrash. Like, the whole premise of this book basically is how we do not want to wind up like Europe, right? That, so he was on television yesterday talking about how Americans, you're already spoiled. You don't need any money. You don't need any help when it comes to healthcare. You don't need prescription drug prices to be lowered. You don't need paid family medical leave.
You carve up food for fun.
Yeah, right. You're food insecure for fun. You don't want to look like Europe. This is the whole premise of his little rant here, and I just... gets under my skin.
We have incrementally headed towards a European state where we have a giant top-down economy, where it stifles innovation, where it creates dependency. And it seems increasingly that progressives are taking over the Democratic Party, and this is the state that they envision. They envision Denmark, they envision France. The problem is it's even worse in a way because they don't actually want people to pay for it. They just want, you know, either to create more debt or have just rich people pay for it, which is not how it works in Europe at all.
You talk about the European culture as a culture of victimhood, and they say that meritocracy doesn't exist. Why are there two axioms important to tell the American story?
Well, because we excel at almost in every quantifiable way possible, we excel economically over Europeans. It's not because we're smarter or born better. It's because we have a system that is about risk, that embraces risk taking, that is entrepreneurial, that rewards people for the things that they invent and do with money or with, you know, with riches and fame and all those things. In Europe, it's a much more docile and pliable population, and they embrace safety over risk most often, and we don't do that here. But we're creating a system that incentivizes people to do that, and that would be a big mistake.
I love
These
this
are
survey.
Incredibly gross generalizations.
Value survey. Yeah. Survey. 70% of Americans still believe that the poor can escape poverty if they work hard enough. Only 35% of Europeans think that. That's the American spirit.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, people don't realize how well they are. I'll give you a quick example. If Britain was a state, if we invaded Britain and made them a state, they'd be the second poorest state per capita in the United States after Mississippi. We are far more successful than European nations, and I think the writers at the New York Times and elsewhere, they don't realize that, or they try to trick people into believing it's not true.
So we're also the kindest, most charitable state. We like to rip on ourselves all the time, but we give more money than many countries' GDP.
Absolutely. An average American gives 7 times as much as the average European. Now, the European will say, hey, you know, we pay a lot in taxes, so that's why we don't give charity. Well, yeah, that's the problem. When you give charity, you give to your local community, you build bonds with your neighbors and your church and your, you know, and local, but you know, you can't do that when government elbows out charity.
And the thing
so
is,
so America, you guys are super wealthy, and you know, you guys just want.
You never had it so good.
You never had it so good. Yeah,
it's funny. They just all measure this by Wall Street. That's their measurement.
Right. Yeah. Oh, so we're really rich. We have so much money. Yeah. Who controls the most wealth in the United States? It's the top 1%.
Right. And think about this trade-off that he just said. Like, we give away so much money because in Europe they don't need to donate to causes. Like, I don't, you know, oh, if I'm European, I don't have to donate to the local preschool because guess what? My tax money funds it.
Well, and you know
so
what?
That's a bad thing that you don't have to donate because the state is actually taking care
all
of
these
basic
churches,
liberties.
Like, all of these churches have to get together to try to get food to people because guess what? All these people are food insecure.
Like, you want to donate to the church to do that, right? Not pay it in your taxes.
Right. Well, and think about all these people that have to do GoFundMes and crowdfunding things to get their medical bills paid.
Right.
Yes.
They wouldn't have to do.
So Americans are giving so much to charities to help all of these GoFundMes for people that can't afford their medical costs or funeral costs. I mean, think how many during the pandemic we've seen how many funeral costs have, like, you know, I mean, it's been ridiculous.
Yes.
Anyway,
absolutely.
So yeah, Americans, you guys are already wealthy according to this guy, and we certainly don't want to be like the rest of Europe, for crying out loud. Anyway, that's where we are in the current Build Back Blah plan. And again, to Natalie's point, it could still fail, right? Because where are we at on the timeline on this? I mean, President Biden is now at this COP conference or whatever in Europe, in Rome, meeting with the Pope today. And then Democrats have to try to push this through the House to get it over to the Senate. And there's no clear sign that this is, by the way, that guy said the progressives are running the show. Progressives just got their hats handed to them.
Yes.
Like, let me just articulate this. Everything that the progressives wanted here in the plan. Look at this. All gone. Renewable energy program, paid family leave, American expanding Medicare over vision dental.
I don't think that's a highlighter, honey.
Oh, I'm blocking it out. Sorry.
No, it is. Isn't it?
It is a highlighter.
It doesn't look very. Okay.
All right. How about this?
Okay, do that.
How about that? These are all the things that progressives did not get. Sad face, sad face. See? Angry face. Angry.
See, that's not a highlighter.
That's
a disease.
These are progressives. That's what progressives didn't
get. They look
get.
Like that today.
Yeah.
Thumbs down.
Down here drawing. Anyway.
I had a point and then I got distracted by your sort of sloppy highlighting. I don't know what it is. It was something about that we, okay. So if you read the newsletter today, there's a story about this stimulus program, Universal Basic Income in Alaska. And a sociologist was able to look at what happens when people have some reliable income to raise their kids. Guess what? They use it. To raise said kids. Wow. So for now, we know the childhood tax credit will go at least through December. And this bill will make it so it goes another year round, right? But it very well could die with this bill and stop in December. So those of you who have been enjoying a little security to feed your kids, don't get used to it. It may or may not be here to stay. Hmm.
Well, and think about it. Even if somebody gets like they were all, we can't have people having savings or whatever. Even if people go out and blow the stimulus money that they get on stupid stuff, at least they're not hoarding it like the wealthy and it's going back into the economy and it's going back to the businesses. It's going, you know. Right.
Yes. But every social study we've seen on universal basic income shows that it actually does get used to pay, say, a flat tire, back bills, grocery bills. Like, no one is saying, oh, great, Junior, I got some money to raise you, but I'm going to buy some lipstick or, you know, like it just doesn't work that way.
No, they're buying groceries, they're spending on their kids.
The basic human need to take care of your offspring. It's not even a human need. Like, every living creature takes care of its perpetuated species, especially the ones that you procreate. It's like, this should be something we agree on.
Yes.
Everybody wants to take care of their offspring. Everybody. And they're, well, and they're
like, I gotta be honest with you, sometimes I don't want to.
Well, that doesn't mean you wanna like actually do the labor of like putting them in bed
putting them to bed. I'm like
last night we got off the show and I was getting ready to go to my book club and talk, sort of like going through the schedule, and we were still on with David, and I was like, you're on bedtime tonight, honey. And he goes, oh, is that like innuendo for you guys are going to have a private night? And I was like, no, it means he's putting the kids to bed.
No, it means I'm on teeth brushing duty. I'm on.
It means he had to do the baths, the stories, because I went to book club.
Oh, I was supposed to give them baths?
I know they had baths.
No, I know that.
The girl's hair was still a little bit wet this morning because you put him to bed with wet hair.
Well, that wasn't in the instructions. That wasn't in the instruction manual. No.
Okay, chat, let's get out of here for a little bit. We'll be right back, you guys.
Sorry.
We've got some stuff to deal with.
Yeah. You don't give me pajamas, my daughter says. He's like, bedtime, get in there.
Yeah, I don't care what you're wearing. You're wearing the same clothes you had from school? I don't care. Get in there. But they're jeans, Daddy. I don't care. You're 20
no,
minutes past
Daddy,
bedtime.
You don't give me
Can
pajamas.
I at least take my shoes off?
Nope. You missed your opportunity. Anyway. Well, we've got more to go here on the show. We're going to talk about big oil was in front of Congress yesterday, and something really fascinating. I'm really endlessly fascinated by this big oil story. I hope that I can impart that to you so you will be equally interested. So make sure you stick around for that. We're also going to talk about student loan debt and what President Biden could do to wipe away student loan debt and how predatory lenders are taking advantage of children. We'll tell you about that. And we've got so much more, including your pet photos today. So stay tuned for that. But first, I want to tell you about our show sponsor today. Today, I want to tell you about Amazon Music. I'm a huge fan of listening to Amazon podcasts right in my kitchen. So we've got the Amazon Echo show set up. And if I got my hands full of sudsy dish soap or whatever, I can just yell out, hey, you know, Alexa, play the Morning Invest podcast. Or no, that's my podcast. I wouldn't tell it to do that. But I might tell it to play some of the true crime podcasts that are available. And you get them 2 weeks early in some cases by subscribing to Amazon Music. Yeah, that's right. Like Dr. Death. Huge fan of Dr. Death. And their new one, Miracle Man, is available 2 weeks early on Amazon Music. You can listen to hilarious podcast Smart Less, which is called Smart Less, 1 week before everyone else. And it's ad-free on Amazon Music. They've got 10 million free podcast episodes to listen to. And yes, of course, they have my podcast, Morning Invest, right there. So you can actually listen to Morning Invest, your very show that you're listening to right now in podcast form, if you like. You can also listen to my Investing in Real Estate podcast, where we teach you how to become a more intelligent real estate investor. I do that twice a week. So you can please, you can, if you'd like to, you can subscribe to the Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris right there. Anyway, they have over 75 million songs on Amazon Music Unlimited also. So not just podcasts, of course. You get music videos and so much more. And you can do it all hands-free with Alexa, right? No matter what you're listening to, you can just say, hey, play my favorite podcast. Boom, and it'll start playing right on your Alexa device. So for a limited time, everyone, new customers can try Amazon Music Unlimited free for 3 months. 3 months. No credit card required. Go to amazon.com/morninginvest. It renews automatically. Cancel at any time. Terms apply. So again, 3 free months. Go try it right now. So our thanks to Amazon Music for that. We've got more to get to here on the show. I want to talk about big oil. So big oil, a number of the CEOs and members of the boards from different big oil companies sat down yesterday in front of Congress to get grilled about where they are on their move towards a cleaner future.
Yes.
Is that the best way to describe it? Like they're there to talk about how much money they are investing in moving towards renewable energy.
Or not doing that.
Yes. So, yes, Congress had a bit of a field day yesterday talking to these big companies who've said that they are going to spend a bulk of their money and resources into moving towards cleaner renewable energy sources, right?
Yes.
So Katie Porter, Congresswoman Katie Porter, who anytime she gets to sink her teeth into one of these big corporate greed hounds, she really goes to town. And yesterday, she brought out some candy. And this was a fantastic moment. I want to show you Katie Porter taking on big oil yesterday and calling their bluff. This is hilarious video. Watch right now.
Shell's 2020 annual report called for between $19 and $22 billion in near-term spending. I'm representing that with this container of M&Ms. Each M&M represents about $50 million in spending. Ms. Watkins, how much has Shell said it will spend in the near term on oil, gas, and chemical operations?
I think you just said we're going to be spending between $18 and $20 billion this year.
That's near term on total spending. How much on oil, gas, and chemical operations?
We're going to be spending...
Well, according to your annual report, you said you're going to spend $16 to $17 billion for oil, gas, and chemical, with another $3 billion for marketing. How much is Shell spending to spend on renewable energy?
This year we'll be spending between $2 and $3 billion.
$2 and $3 billion on renewables and energy solutions. In your testimony, you said, quote, meeting the demand for reliable energy while simultaneously addressing climate change is a huge undertaking and one of the defining challenges of our time. Shell has made these promises before. Shell pledged to spend $6 billion between 2017 and 2020 on renewable energy. How much of that did Shell actually spend? The answer is about half. Ms. Watkins, Does this look like a huge undertaking to you?
Congresswoman, what I can tell you is that there needs to be both a demand and a supply of clean energy, which is why we're working very closely with our customers so that that demand increases over time and we are
ready to
supply.
To me, this does not look like an adequate response to one of the defining challenges of our time. This is greenwashing. Shell is trying to fool people into thinking that it's addressing the climate crisis, when what it's actually doing is to continue to put money into fossil fuels.
Go ahead, girl.
Wow.
Yeah, that was excellent.
You know, what's interesting about that is that she's calling out these companies for, you know, spending all of this money on advertising. And you, all you need to do is turn on your mainstream media stations right now. I mean, you can see even newsletters are like brought to you by Exxon, you know, brought to you by Shell. Like, they're out there and they're talking about their clean energy initiatives and all of this stuff.
Yes.
And I think what she said was really poignant. She said, we need there to be more demand. Are you kidding me? There's not an enormous demand right now for clean and renewable energy sources.
Right. And also, there was not a demand for fossil fuel before the industry created one.
Right.
I mean, you know, the history of the vehicle is that it started as an electric vehicle.
Right.
And then became a gas-powered vehicle because of the created demand around the oil and gas industry. They can do this. They've done it before.
Yeah.
They started with that. They started telling us what we need, and we went there.
Most Americans don't know. I mean, most Americans don't even know that the first cars in the United States were actually electric cars. In fact, Woodrow Wilson, famously, like, he loved his electric car. He used to drive around in this electric car all over Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Like, himself, which, you know, it's not going to happen today. President of the United States had an electric car in the early part of the 1900s.
Well, and think about that. They just said, hey, if the demand was there, but look at the EV car that they ended up destroying. There was a lot of demand for that car back then.
Right.
And then they just destroyed it for what?
In California. Yeah, they shredded it into little tiny pieces. Right.
Right.
Who Killed the Electric Car is an amazing documentary if you haven't seen that
and documentary. And it's like, okay, lady, let's sit down and have a chicken or egg discussion then, if that's what you really want. But what we're saying to you is, we don't buy the lip service of, like, this is the challenge of our lifetime. If this is the challenge of your lifetime, right? Then give it that much.
Yeah, if it mattered, you create the demand.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And it matters. If you read some of the reports in the newsletter this morning, one by some estimates, we have about 11 more years to correct our carbon emissions before just these awful weather patterns that kill people are here to stay. Raise your hand if you want that. No. Then tell your local legislative representative that you want climate change now.
Yeah,
now, right now.
Does anyone in our chat want
flash floods, cyclones?
Let's see if anyone does. Let's see anyone in our chat. Yeah, I think there's overwhelming demand for this.
Who likes bomb cyclones and hurricanes and landfall and
The Midwest is going to be packed.
Exactly. Everyone's moving out of the coast because all the coasts are being destroyed. Florida's not going to exist anytime soon. But this all comes on the heels of record profits. Rising oil and gas prices lift Chevron to the highest level since 2013. Right? Third quarter profits, highest levels. Look at that. I mean, $4 billion in Wall Street estimates exceeding that.
A lot of that has to do with the hack, though, Clayton. So we can't really... You know, we can't really blame them for that.
Yeah, it's just Colonial Pipeline. That's all it is. That's all it is. But I did want to show you something. I thought this story to me is really fascinating. Over the past few months, Exxon, of course, had been sort of, I don't want to say taken over, but we did this on the show. An activist hedge fund basically bought up as much of Exxon as possible.
To get themselves on the board.
Yeah, and so they're activists, right? I think it was called Engine One, if I'm not mistaken, the name of and they basically said, we don't care about your profits, you know, with fossil fuels. We want you to move towards cleaner energy. So how do we do that? We're not going to wait for Congress to do it. We're going to take over your company, basically, by buying up as many shares. So now you have to listen to us, right? That's what this activist hedge fund did. Then the same thing happened this week to Shell. to Royal Dutch Shell and another hedge fund, activist hedge fund.
This is a Bruce Wayne type move.
Yeah, it is. Like, what? Who's telling us what to
do? Oh, I own the board, Mr.
Mr. Wayne. Sorry. Oh, you didn't know that I was here? So what happened? What's interesting is, so let's look here. I'm going to go back to my little drawing pad, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go, some drawing. Okay, so you got Exxon, you got Shell, right? And what happens is suddenly these activists board, I think it was called Engine One, if I'm not mistaken, right? Engine One comes in and says, hey, we want you to go green, right? And they're like, oh crap, we can't really do that because we're spending so much money still on oil, right? So we're still making all these oil drums. Is that a drop of oil? That's a terrible drop of oil.
Or a drop of poo.
Right, or a potato. Anyway, we're going to still spend money over here doing this, even though now these huge shareholders, this activist hedge fund is saying, no, 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 we want you to focus on this. So now Exxon literally was forced to start focusing on this because a huge portion of their ownership sits here now. The same thing this week happened with, I think it was called Third Point, and from Shell. This, another activist hedge fund comes in, and I think it's Third Point, if I'm not mistaken. Get these names mixed up.
Who are the investors behind activist hedge funds?
Well-intentioned
people?
Yeah, who are ESG
who
investors.
Are these well-intentioned
Now look, let's
people.
Be clear. They want to make money.
Yes.
Right? So these, but they see huge upside in ESG investments
and
in
being
environmental
first.
Science and government investments.
Right.
The create the
yeah,
demand
and first and create yeah. and perhaps so that what they sold, what they told Shell this week was, you guys suck. They basically said, you guys stink. You guys, you need to break in half.
Can you make little stink?
You guys stinky. You guys are stinky. You guys are a little stinky. Okay, so Shell, you're stinky, and we want you to break in half. Literally, they said, we don't think you're doing a good job, so you need to cut yourself into different parts. You're doing such a bad job investing in green technology and climate that we think you're doing such a crappy job that you need to break yourself apart in order to do it. Like, that's another activist hedge fund having to tell, like, they won't listen to Congress.
No, it has to be the money.
It has to be the money. It has to be this. And this is how we're going to see change, guys. Like, I'm pretty excited about it. I found this story to be really, really fascinating, as you can tell.
Yeah. And Shell could not be reached for comment on this.
Obviously. Sorry for my terrible drawing. Sorry.
They're jailing attorneys, right? Aren't they? Is that Shell that did that? Who was the one that jailed that attorney that...
It, was Exxon? It Shell or was it...
Exxon. I think it was Exxon.
Exxon. Jeez.
I think, hey, if you're going to do these drawing segments, I think we need an intro for it. I think you need to sing that well, hello, my name. No. It's got to be that, well, hello, my name is Clayton, and I like to do drawings.
or I could be like Bob Ross, like, today, I'm going to draw some happy squirrels or happy little birds.
Happy little birds. Happy stink.
Happy little squirrel. Happy little squirrels.
I draws what I like and
that's
I
a kangaroo.
Likes what I drew.
I don't even know what this is.
It looks like a kangaroo with a goat head or a goat body.
Goat body. Grover's not impressed. I think Grover's like, did you draw me? I don't even know what that is. Anyway.
Why is he breathing fire?
Is our guest here yet?
No.
All right. Well, then we will tell you about our show sponsor over at Babbel. Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Everybody.
Or even
learning
English.
Yes. Let's see if Babbel can teach me proper grammar.
You want to learn language?
Natalie, I think you should do the first little part of this in Portuguese.
Novo. Nope.
See, do it in Portuguese. Because she's used
so
Babbel
cool.
to learn some Portuguese.
Okay. Se você quer aprender português, pode usar Babbel. Babbel é um app que vai ajudar a aprender a português.
Okay, let me translate.
Yay, clap.
So Babbel is an amazing app that will teach you, help you to learn a foreign language or Portuguese.
Com só 15 minutos por dia.
15 minutos por dia, in 15 minutes a day.
Sí, pode ser.
I understand. Thanks to...
Okay. Yes, you absolutely can teach yourself a new language with just an investment of 15 minutes a day. Babbel takes the major task of breaking down a whole language into just 15 minutes a day. That's why it is the number one selling language learning app. You use it on the go. You don't have to sit down with books and grammar. It's a great way to just constantly feed yourself a steady diet of a new language. You know, other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Now, I have tried to practice with certain like gamified language apps before. I really don't like that. I really believe that you need experts to teach you to break down a language by the rules. I really think that's the only way that you can learn, and Babbel is great for that piece. For instance, there have been some, like when Clayton has been practicing Portuguese, he's like, oh, I'm listening to this podcast. I'm like, that does not help you with grammar, and grammar is such an important piece of any language. Babbel allows you to choose from 14 different languages, including French, Italian, German, Spanish, Portuguese. And there are many ways to learn. In addition to the lessons, you also get the podcast. So you need a foundation when it comes to learning a lesson, a language, and then you need the practice. You need sort of the practical application. Booksmart, you know, is one thing, and then actual use of a language out in the world is a different thing altogether. It comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. So start your new language journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a speaking Portuguese, I can't go back. My
it's like Spanglish.
Wants to go this way. Yeah. I know that I have a terrible accent when it comes to Portuguese, but I have been able to become fairly fluent with just constant practice. And I am the kind of person that gets super excited about learning the nuance of a language, not just like my name is Natalie or I can do this. But like, you know, like, again, the nuance, this sort of things that you know that are actually used, that gets me super excited. So when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months total for half price for just 3 months. So go to Babbel.com, use promo code INVEST. That's Babbel, Babbel.com. The code is INVEST. Babbel will help you with language for life. Pode ajudar-lhe.
Oh, nice job. Nice job.
Yes, we need to get... Where's the applaud?
Oops, oh, sorry. No. Hit the wrong one. Good job.
Thank you. Obrigada.
All right, so we're waiting on our guest to talk about student loans. In the meantime, though, let's talk about Facebook, shall we? So let's move on to Facebook while we wait for our guest.
Hopefully I feel like we could just do this whole story. Facebook decided that its corporate name is Meta, and that is stupid. Moving on.
Next story, trending. What's trending?
So here's Mark Zuckerberg yesterday coming out and making this crazy announcement. Let's listen to Mark Zuckerberg make this announcement, I guess, from his living room, his new Meta living room, which is not really his living room, I guess. It's in the metaverse living room.
Okay, I just thought it was like a sparsely populated space.
Looking at and reporting on our business as two different segments. One for our family of apps, and one for our work on future platforms. And as part of this, it is time for us to adopt a new company brand to encompass everything that we do. To reflect who we are and what we hope to build, I am proud to announce that starting today, our company is now Meta. Our mission remains the same. It's still about bringing people together. Our apps and their brands, they're not changing either. And we are still the company that designs technology around people. But now we have a new North Star to help bring the metaverse to life. And we have a new name that reflects the full breadth of what we do and the future that we want to help build. From now on, we're going to be metaverse first, not Facebook first.
They need to stop writing.
Nothing makes sense.
They need to stop writing hold for applause in his scripts.
Right. He's like, and now we call it Meta.
You love it. I knew it.
Now, and instead it's like, now we're going to be calling ourselves Meta.
You love it.
Even yesterday at Menlo Park where they're corporate headquarters are.
Yes.
Like Facebook employees, they went outside and they like, oh, they already like, where? They already changed. It's instead of it being Facebook with a big F.
You work at Meta now.
You work at Meta. And that's a Facebook employee taking a picture of himself, like in his sweatpants on his way to work. Like,
and I suppose your paycheck now will come from Meta.
Meta
Industries. And they have a new ticker.
Cyberdyne.
On the New York Stock Exchange, or are they on the NASDAQ? I can't remember off
NASDAQ,
the top of my
yeah,
head.
NASDAQ.
And their new ticker is MTVS. It's like it's Metaverse.
Oh, funny enough, actually. So, interestingly, Meta. So wait, what is it? It's Meta.
It's like MTVS, I believe.
Metaverse.
Let me just double check.
Yeah, find out which one it is.
Because it is M. No, M. There's no T. MVRS.
MVRS. Okay. So what's interesting is, well, I can't find it. MVRS.
That's what they said.
Okay. I don't know.
Okay. You know, Mark Zuckerberg is saying that, you know, Facebook will remain Facebook, where your grandma likes to tell you about the vaccine. Instagram will remain Instagram, where Peloton teachers show you what they look like in bikinis.
Uh-huh.
WhatsApp will continue to be your group chats for your running moms.
Uh-huh.
Right? I'm telling you how to use these apps.
Right.
Or dating scams.
I mean, that's how I use Instagram.
It's for your running moms.
Oh, to see my Peloton teachers in bikinis.
Absolutely. That's what
or
it's
Biden.
For.
Right. Or Biden.
Or Biden.
Yes. Yes, Facebook, all of these apps will remain as they are, but the umbrella company is now Meta, and they decide that these will eventually sort of coexist in this Second Life sort of virtual world, and we all will want to be there to shop, to work, to learn, to interact, right? So fine. I feel like this is a very obvious nomenclature because the thing that we, that like keeps us up at night is that Facebook will take our metadata and use it for nefarious purposes and use it for things that harm us as a society. We know that's already happening. And it's just like this name is like, okay, we do that.
By
we
the
want
way,
that.
Side note funny is that Meta on the stock exchange is not actually Facebook. This is a totally separate company that is now benefiting. Their stock is up. Look how big their stock is up because people are mistakenly buying the wrong company.
It's like that little restaurant in Philadelphia. was it Philadelphia? Remember that restaurant that just like exploded because people were... It wasn't because of people buying the wrong stock, but...
Oh, yeah. In New Jersey. I know what you're
New
talking
Jersey.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, this listed funds trust, Roundhill Ball Metaverse ETF, is exploding today because people are buying the wrong one.
They couldn't just sell their ticker to Facebook. They could have probably made more money.
Can you sell a ticker? I think, is it your choice? Or I don't even know how that gets chosen.
I don't know.
But
I'm not sure.
Pretty funny. So Meta is not the actual stock ticker, and this is the wrong one. So anyway, yeah.
Meanwhile, the CEO of Patagonia came out today and said, we still will not be advertising with any Facebook-related platforms until you change your algorithm and change some of your internal workings. And we are encouraging other companies to make similar choices.
Good.
I've talked about before how I'm a big fan of this company in Patagonia, and I'm always willing to like spend a little more on coats and things for my kids, especially because I pass them down to three.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So this company, so we're still going to be about bringing people together, but now what it'll be is bringing people together in a digital climate, in a digital world. So having meetings with people, instead of doing it face to face, you'll do it through Meta.
Yes.
Through like you'll wear the Oculus headset.
Yes.
And you'll go into this like fake world, like what was that movie with Michael
Douglas? Ready Player One. Oh.
No, Michael Douglas was like sexually abused by Demi Moore. It was called Disclosure. No, what was the movie? It was Discomfort, Disclosure.
I don't
know. I was thinking more like Surrogates. You ever see that?
Yes, with Bruce Willis, Surrogates.
Yeah. No, but it was, I'm trying to, I can't think of it. Yeah, I think it was Disclosure, wasn't it? Somebody else
I don't remember that movie.
Here.
What does it have to do with?
Anyway, it was all in a virtual, like he went into the filing cabinet. He went in through like this virtual environment to get the documents. And like, it was all like Roblox. Like that's what it looked like.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's what he says. That's
Tron?
What it's going to be like. No, Tron.
All right. That makes sense to you, I suppose.
Yes, people are saying Disclosure.
Disclosure. But, I know I wasn't crazy. So anyway, he says our brand right now is so tightly linked with one product that it can't possibly represent everything that we're doing today at Facebook, let alone the future.
Mm-hmm.
He says the next chapter of the internet is the metaverse. It's a complex topic to describe, but roughly speaking, it's a world where people work, where people shop, where people play,
yes,
and they do everything else. Instead of doing it in real life, you're not going to shop in real life at the mall anymore. You're going to go into the Facebook metaverse. And by the way, a lot of cryptocurrencies that are built around this metaverse are taking off today, skyrocketing today. Think about, I'm just going to throw this out. I know we're sort of mocking it. It's fun to mock, but just think about it for a second.
Well, I'm not mocking the idea of it or what the potentials are of it. What I think is the most concerning is that I do not want to hand all of this data to that person.
Right.
Specifically this dude, right?
Well,
who has
true.
Not been shown to be responsible with it or to be able to not act out of his own self-interest or the self-interest of his company. So I don't mind the idea of somebody trying to, he used the phrase, this is the next chapter of the internet. Like, who here wants Mark Zuckerberg in charge of the next chapter of the internet, right? I don't think we would elect that guy for this.
Does anybody here watching right now want Mark Zuckerberg in charge of the internet?
Go watch him speak. It looks like he completely mirrored Tim Cook. Like even his legs were moving like Tim Cook's. Like it looks like he's like, I'm going to watch Tim Cook and that's how I'm going to deliver my speeches from now on.
Yeah, they do like to copy that presentation style.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is kind of what... Imagine what this metaverse will look like. You know, you may be sitting there going like, well, what is Clayton even talking about? Well, just imagine for a second that it's like you're on your computer and you kind of go into like a street. Think about like there being like just like a street in your video game or whatever. You're playing like Fortnite. Your son is like playing Fortnite, okay? And he's like going along as a character. And as he's going down the street to play the video game with his friend, there's a sign here that's just like up and it's like Nike, right?
Yeah.
So this advertisement is in this metaverse.
Yes.
Right? It's not in the real world. Like, where is your advertising happening now? And these companies are going to be throwing so much money into this kind of experience here.
It's like Second Life. Have you ever played Second Life?
It absolutely is like Second Life. Yes.
You know
know what I see when I'm going to write on your... You keep talking.
Okay.
When I see this...
You need your microphone. Okay.
Meta.
Uh-huh.
Like that. I see like this. Me too. Do you see? Like, I can't reach here.
Okay.
So, there's something about the graphic that makes it look
you're not allowed to touch my iPad anymore.
Because of me too?
No, because of...
Because that looks like crap. Oh, because yours looked so good before. Sorry. Yeah.
Mine looked really good, and you just came along and...
Yeah, imagine if that was a spreadsheet.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you were really going somewhere with that. I'm sorry.
You really.
I don't think we needed that.
I like to illustrate.
Illustration to let us know how disturbing this idea is. I think if you pitched that as your napkin pitch, you'd get no VC money.
Yeah, it looks like it says Meta Dicky now.
See, yeah. And the little cute little doggy. Yeah, see? Don't ever touch my... Don't ever touch my iPad again. All right. So anyway, what do you guys think about the metaverse? Are we going into the metaverse? Are we joining it or not?
I mean, to be honest, there's certain use cases, and I've already seen these. Like they have the buses and stuff where they take kids on, and it actually looks like they're driving on Mars, and they're educating them on the planet and stuff. So, you know, this would be a way to take kids into aquariums and or to go to places where you would maybe never get to go. And have experiences and think about like people in wheelchairs that can't go anywhere, that they could go out shopping, they could go to the mall and things like that. So I think there could be a lot of benefits, but like Natalie said, you know, we'd have to give them so much data because our credit cards would have to be in there for us to go into these stores and buy things. And it's like, is that real ID that's going to follow us in there, you know, where they can scan our information, our medical cards in there because we're actually going to the doctor in these things now and getting checkups and, you know.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And who's to say that underprivileged kids could even get into the digital aquarium? They probably will be just as costly as the regular aquarium, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and hopefully that would And hopefully that would be something that they would do, where they would be like, okay, so we're going to fund this part of the educational side of it, and that will be like to give it to disadvantaged kids. You know, like that's one thing Facebook has done with the internet and stuff. They are trying to bring the internet out to disadvantaged populations. So maybe it would be kind of the same thinking in there. I would hope.
There is a book that was written, I want to say about, 2008 is when it was written, called The Myth of the Digital Democracy by, I want to say he's an anthropologist named Matthew Hindman. And it's a great book to read anytime you hear these companies saying like, oh, the internet's for everybody. Look how we're able to level the playing field. Anybody can succeed on the internet. It's not true. The internet does not level the playing field. Never buy into that. You think of how much money it costs to be Google or to put your money out there and advertise like CNN or any, you know, the sort of, the capitalism of the physical world is mirrored on the internet. The internet does not really level playing fields the way you think it does.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Agreed. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got, we're having some trouble getting our guest on today. So we'll try to have her on early next week. I'm not sure. It says like waiting for host and she's in the link, but we can't bring her on somehow. So
wait, I can send you a link. I don't know if she got the right link. If she's saying waiting for host, then she's probably in the wrong area.
Okay. Yeah. If you could send me, could you text me the proper link? Yep. We'll make sure she gets in there. In the meantime, we could do our trending.
Or we could tell you about the share sponsor, Simply Safe. Would let's you like to do that?
Yeah,
or?
I'll tell them about Simply Safe.
Okay.
Huge and then you fan work of Simply on that. Safe. Okay. Well, now I've got to try to do this. Or you want to, sorry.
Just do it. Do it in Portuguese.
Yo vou dizer les sobre nosso sponsor. I don't know the word sponsor. I would say it's a, I don't know.
Okay.
Peço desculpe, não posso fazer em português. Vou fazer em inglês.
Yeah, let me talk about Simply Safe.
Okay, please do that. They did not pay for my. They don't support the show for my.
No, I've been a huge. Portuguese. Well, you know, I've been a huge fan of Simply Safe for years now, and they have they're the reason our whole home is protected, and it's super simple to set up. I mean, that's the beauty of Simply Safe, is that you can have whole home protection and set up in just like 15 minutes. That's how fast it is to get Simply Safe up and running to protect your home. And remember when we set up our Simply Safe, like you open this up, that's the main hub right there. You connect it to your internet, you put the panel on the door, like the keypad, no running wires, none of that stuff. And our whole house was protected and up and running in just a few minutes. You can put sensors in the house, in the corner, so that you can protect yourself against burglary. It has, they have their new, brand new, check this out, the new exterior camera. Check this out. Look. They have their brand new exterior camera. It has 140-degree field of view, so you can keep watch over your entire yard. It has 1080 HD resolution and an 8x optical zoom. That means you can zoom in, clearly see things like faces, license plates, and capture critical evidence. It's, by the way, Simply Safe was ranked as the U.S. News & World Report Best Home Security System of 2021. And they just got even better with their wireless outdoor security system. It is really advanced technology. It has an easy-to-remove rechargeable battery, so it doesn't need an outlet and can go anywhere on your property. The camera has it all and integrates with your Simply Safe home security system, extending its protection to the outside. Together, it means every door, window, and room are protected, and now your property will be as well. To learn more about the exciting new Simply Safe wireless outdoor security camera, visit simplysafe.com/invest. What's more is that Simply Safe is celebrating this new camera by giving you 20% off your entire system, your whole system, not just the camera. And your first month of monitoring service is free when you enroll in the interactive monitoring. Again, that's simplysafe.com/invest. There you go. simplysafe.com/invest. So our thanks to Simply Safe for their
support. And Maya is here. Is it Maya or Mia? Did we?
Hold on. Let's ask her.
I'm going to bring her up. Here she is.
It is Maya. Maya Fields from DePaul University. Am I right? Do I have your first name spelled?
Oh, we got no audio.
Oh, I see you.
No, yep. Can't hear you though.
But I don't. Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Now we got you.
Good. Okay, I'm coming through loud and clear. Yes, Maya Fields from DePaul University.
All right, Maya. You know, we wanted to have you on because you and I were talking over email about the complexities of student loan borrowing and the predatory nature of this, how the debt burden affects all of us, not just, I think there's this misconception out there that it's just borrowers who are affected by student loans, but non-borrowers as well, and what we can do about it as this conversation needs to keep happening in order for us to experience some change. So welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. And your dissertation that you've been defending is on this very subject. How did you come to want to speak on this particular issue? Why is this of such importance to you?
It's really important when you think about what's going on with student loans, how it's really affecting all of us. So we can see how it's affecting the economy. And when you think about individuals who pursue higher education, there's more civic engagement, more volunteerism, more giving back in their community. So it's really far reaching when you think about, you know, higher ed and the benefits. And I started to study it because there's a continuous push, and it always has been, for pursuing higher education, especially for first generation students, just as a way of really projecting themselves in society and really just kind of moving forward with things. So you think about, you know, if this is something that's continuously put out there, like pursue higher education, but on the other hand, you have a lot of individuals who are struggling with student loan debt. You kind of want to know a little bit more about what's going on the, you know, in between there. So that's where my study topic came about. And I did qualitative research on this study, which there really isn't a lot out there about it. And so with qualitative research, you're really digging into the stories of the individuals, and you're understanding how, from their perspective, is this really affecting them. And so what was kind of unnerving about it is when you hear about the different individuals and they're sharing about their student debt experiences, is how they just really did not have enough education about it. And so when you think about first generation students, which means that they don't have a parent to go to really to get this information about how to engage in college, they know, hey, go to university, go to college, that's a good next step. But then it's kind of like, figure out how to pay for it on your own. The counseling that students receive from different universities, because my participants were from different universities, even though the counseling may have been different, something that was very consistent was that it was not very clear. There was not a lot of information. So what a lot of people know is that students fill out a FAFSA. That's probably a pretty common term. And they are able to take out these student loans. But, you know, they get the money and it comes and they pay for tuition. And that's just kind of it. So next semester, tuition comes again. And it's just kind of like, check the box. Yes, I want more student loans. And you're not really getting a lot of consistent education and information about it. And just kind of to really bring home another point about it, why I say it gets pretty disturbing, is you think about, these are 17 and 18 year olds. We talk about the prices of mortgages, cars, even business loans. If these students want to forego college and get a business loan, there are some other information that has to be involved. There's going to be some checks and balances. We're checking credit. We're asking for a cosigner, different things of that nature. But this is not happening with students. All they have to say is, yes, I want to go to college. And then they're getting the funds to continue their education. I had several students in my study, because I looked specifically at students with above average student debt, who had mortgage size student loan debt. Yeah. And it is very much so crippling. I had an individual who was in the study who she has a master's degree. She has mortgage size student loan debt and can't purchase a house. She's talking about, you know, how she can't purchase a house with her husband. I had a one particular individual who has to hold off on having children because he can't afford it at this particular point. Now on this end, they know, like, hey, I wish I would have handled these things better. And had I been properly educated about it, I would have. But it's great to know on the other end. But, you know, had you had these tools and you know how to properly use student loans going into your higher education, they could have been in a much better position on the other end.
And I know specifically for students of color and first generation college students, there's a high dropout rate because they don't have these mentors. They don't have a system in place, right, to tell them, you're going to have to pay this back. This is what this is going to mean. This is what this experience will be like for you, even arriving at a university where you don't feel you fit in. So there's a lot of, like, students who drop out because they don't have this support. There's no system in place now to give it to them. But that debt still exists, even if you don't finish, right? And so this is a crazy system to me.
It really is. Yes, you're exactly right. The debt still exists. And then they have to pay back the debt without the ideal increased salary that they were hoping for with a college degree. So yes, you are exactly right. I don't know if you remember, but a lot of people may remember this about the college experience. You used to be able to, like when you would go to the student center, there was tables with individuals advertising credit cards, get a t-shirt, get a hat. Yeah. You can't do that anymore. There are different laws against this where you're not allowed to do that on college campuses because it was taking advantage of that particular population. Because a lot of times students would, I'll get the credit card because I want the t-shirt or I want the hat. But they stopped it and they asked for enhanced disclosure. You'll also notice this on your credit card statements. It says now, if you only pay $5, you'll be paying this for 20 years and you'll pay this over a certain amount of time. Yes. And so that came about because enhanced disclosure was brought about because they said that by individuals not having the information that they need to make an informed decision, it is in fact kind of in a way taking advantage of those individuals. So it's a similar situation. And I break down in my research the parallels between what happened with the credit card industry and what's going on with student loans. One thing that I will point out is not one of the participants regretted taking out a student loan or going to college. Many of them said, this is the only way that I would have been able to do it. My parents were not able to afford it. My parents didn't even really know where I needed to start. They needed the tool. They just want to know how to properly use it.
Yeah.
When we talk about trying to fix this, Maya, that's the interesting question that you've heard from Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, who wanted the president to, with a stroke of a pen, get rid of $50,000 in federal student loan debt. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, also saying the same thing. President Biden has been reluctant to do any of that. Where do you see the fix that could be put in place here to help the future of America, you know, people get out of this debt so they're not saddled with this for the rest of their lives?
When you think about really the individuals who are saddled with student loan debt now and the type of information they receive going into it, it's hard not to to really have just be disheartened and understand where erasing at least some of this debt comes from. Because you can't go and give someone a $200,000 mortgage and not explain kind of the underpinnings of it. There's also going to have to be a way that that individual is going to have to guarantee that they're getting their money back. In a sense, it's kind of like student loan money is handed out very easily. You can't take it away in bankruptcy. They know they're going to be able to get their money back from you. So it's not like, you know, there's kind of a checks and balance system in there. So I completely understand where the push for erasing even some of these some of the debt for individuals is coming from because they were not properly educated on the front end. I think going forward, when I mentioned enhanced disclosure, we really need to focus on properly educating individuals on how to use the loans going in. I talk about how high schools can get involved by allowing financial educators to come in and speak to not only students, but speak to parents. Because one thing that really stood out is that individuals in this study, what it shows is that connections, influences, friends, peers, parents, what they say rivals the cost of the education. So kind of let that sink in. If you have a $40,000 tuition payment that's coming up or a school that you're able to attend and best friend, mom, your peers are saying, this is a great opportunity. And you even have that gut of feeling of like, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay for this? What they say rivals the cost. So it's important that others around you are educated. I think for legislators, we really need to push for, again, enhanced disclosure. One thing that kind of came out in the study that a participant said is as I was getting the student loan funds, she said, I assumed because they were giving me the funds, that I could afford it. And that's yes, because that's crazy. It really is so crazy. It's just kind of when you hear these statements, it's like, oh my goodness, it's, you know, getting their perspective makes sense. But they don't receive statements in the mail saying, hey, by the way, in 5 years, this is close to what your student loan payment is going to be. They don't know until they get out of school and you receive the first payment in the mail. And then you're scrambling. How are you going to figure out how to, you know, how to manage this? So there's a lot of ways in between that we can continue to educate students how to use loans properly. You know, yeah. As you continue to get funds each semester, there should be education in between during those points. And students don't know interest rates. Not one person can tell me what their interest rate was on their student loan.
God. Wow. In your whole study, nobody knew.
Not one person can say that they clearly knew what the interest rate was. They know
but
now.
But we all know, like for our house, that's the sign of being yes. an adult. Like, oh my God, I locked in a 2.85, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
Like,
what yes. number are you? Yeah, I'm a 2.85. I'm a 2.95. Yeah.
Wow. You know, something that comes to mind, I read the book by Ron Lieber called The Opposite of Spoiled, which is about raising children who are not spoiled. And he gives this study of he grew up a poor child and somehow someone told him how to get into college. Just talk to this guy who's, you know, knows admission experts at these certain universities, talk to this person for this like favorable loan, and he realized there's this whole like network that's available to privileged and wealthy children that underprivileged people don't know about. They don't know how to talk to this person. They don't know how to figure out how to get the loan for that. They don't know how to like that there are people who will help with your applications to get you a better, maybe even a scholarship, maybe a fellowship, right? Those things are available, but underprivileged families don't know. Right now, it's still for the cool kids. So these predatory loan practices and these admissions to colleges that maybe your family has no business being affiliated with for all sorts of reasons will persist until it opens up for everybody. Is that what your research found?
Yes, you're definitely onto something. And that particular group is primarily first generation students. And yeah. so they just don't, and it kind of brings me back to a story I'm thinking about from one particular participant. He was talking about how, you know, from when he was little, he always remembered his parents saying like, you're going to go to college. That's the next best step. And so he focused on education, grades, taking tests the right way. He mentioned that his high school counselors were not necessarily the best. So he wasn't getting a lot of information there. And he didn't really know where to go. And, you know, just focusing on test taking, the SAT, the ACT. And then he got to school and it's like, oh my goodness, how am I going to pay for it? He didn't have a network of individuals to talk to about, you know, how do I fund this? What are the different ways? And it was just kind of like, well, get a loan. I'm here. And they made a decision between do I not go to school and stay here and I don't really have as many opportunities for myself, or do I go to school and do what I have been told by everyone around me is going to push me forward in society. And the loan mm-hmm. is the only way I'm going to do it. And they do it. So you are exactly right, Natalie. First generation students don't have a network of individuals to go to. Most of the time, they don't know anyone at the university to talk to about these particular things. It's like, yes, I got in. This is my ticket. This is going to help me move forward. And then what do you do now?
Right.
Awful.
Yeah. So it seems that right now, this stimulus package is not going to help anybody get any community college. That's not going to happen in the near future.
Right.
So it really is up to individual families to sort of step back and say, oh, is this the golden ticket that we thought it would be, like going to Yale, going to, right? Or is there a state school that can give me the equal amount of education but will not put me into debt? Now, it's like what do you call it? Like a lever, like
a scale,
right? So families need to learn to tamper whatever like expectations they have, this sort of American dream, with what the reality is of their financial abilities and make educated choices. We all have to now learn to do that and spread this word, because there is not going to be any higher education for at least not in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's part of the stimulus, yeah.
So what your research is saying, like, we have to collectively take responsibility for college-aged children,
yeah.
Help educate them to make a good, prudent decision, right? It's like, I don't go out and try and get a mortgage on the White House thinking that I can buy it. That's not reasonable, right?
And Deborah in our chat says, I believe it's all about educating all of us, parents and students, to help us make decisions about college. It's the reality that we need to know about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we appreciate that research, because the more that we can sort of take collective responsibility, because we're not going to get it from the government, then we make sure that we don't have a generation of children that are burdened with mortgage size debt, like you said.
I've got to ask you before we let you go, is what has been the response from DePaul University about this research? Have they been open arms about it, or have you received any sort of pushback about it? I mean, this kind of hits them right in the stomach, doesn't it?
I think depending on the department, the department that you're speaking with, would determine the feedback. But I would say there definitely is a lot of support, obviously, from the Department of Education, because I'm talking about educating individuals in a way that they can act strategically with the student loan tool. And that's something that we can do as a higher education university. You know, that's our bread and butter. So we can figure out a way to better educate individuals about it. So they have definitely been receptive to that, because I am all for higher education. Definitely there are benefits not only to individuals, but to society. But I don't think we're asking for too much when participants are asking to be better educated about how to interact with student loans to pursue their higher education.
You have to have a meeting with the bursar then. You say, can I present my dissertation to you?
Right. Well, and good for DePaul for supporting this research. So good on them for willing to like pull the wool back a little bit and look stare this in the face. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for the amazing research. I'd love to have you come back on as we kind of unpack this over the next year, as we look at what's going to happen with student loan debt in this country and what the federal government plans to do. So Maya Fields from DePaul University, thank you for the amazing research, and continue doing some great work out there, bringing this to our attention.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Very nice to see you.
Great stuff. Fascinating. I mean, it's really troubling. And kind of touched on it a little bit, but I hit this a lot, which is this idea of return on investment, an ROI.
You know,
like, it's a question, sadly, in America we need to ask, right? It's not just a foregone conclusion you can go to college and it's going to be free like you can in Europe.
Right.
You know, in America, okay, what is the return on me spending 4 years and going into debt $80,000?
And what is within the means of our family? What do I want to carry with me as an adult into my life?
And I remember I don't know if you guys remember this old joke, but there was a joke in Indiana that I heard a lot. It's like, what's the first words you hear out of a Notre Dame graduate's mouth when you meet them? Hello, welcome to Burger King. How can I help you? It's like you have them spending all this money to go to college and they can't get the jobs that they even went to school for in many cases.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in our chat saying, you know, I see family members all saddled with different student loan debt. You guys, you know, right in our chat, just saying like, whew, well, you know, we...
Six figure
student loan debt. Oh my gosh, that's just awful, awful, awful. So thanks to Maya, great stuff. And thanks for joining us on the show. That's great.
And there's just this idea that like, oh, there's no scholarships out there, or... you know, it's only for students of color, I'm too white for it, or there's no scholarships for students of color. There are, but most people don't know like how to go down the right roads, mm-hmm. because those roads are, you know, offered to certain people and not others.
I wonder if that's as it is relates to like rental assistance right now in the United States. You know, all this money, $46 billion has been put out by the federal government to these states. And we found out that very little of it's even been used, because who knows even how to get access to some of this.
Well,
and I have a question. Is it so when you say that student loan debt cannot be forgiven in a bankruptcy or whatever, is that only federal student loans or is that also private?
I think it's all. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with it being federal or private. It's just student loan debt.
Yeah.
Okay.
That happened under George W. Bush. The real secret is, you know, that Republicans hate trial lawyers, right? And so the thing that trial lawyers used to do is they would go to school, they would get their law degree, and they understood how bankruptcy worked. So this was a real punch to the stomach of like liberal lawyers. And then they would file bankruptcy. And so,
and then work for 7 years, have it taken off their records, right, and then go on and make six-figure salaries.
And then, you know, and so they hate, you know, the Republicans have long hated lawyers and trial lawyers. And so that was a real punch to the trial lawyers. That was, in, you know, during President George W. Bush's years. But I think the trial lawyers piece is such a small percentage of like that. But nevertheless, you cannot declare bankruptcy now to
and
try to get
see how it affects, you know, yeah, so many other people who cannot write off this debt. Okay, let's get to the trending
yes
topics of the day. This is where we scour the internet and tell you what's moving up in the ranks of the conversation so that you can get involved or tell us right here in the chat what you think. Cristiano Ronaldo is trending because he and his girlfriend, Spanish model Georgina Rodriguez, announced that they are expecting twins. Ronaldo already has four children, two of which are twins.
Wow.
So this is his second set of twins. He looks happy about it. This would be my personal nightmare.
Just have
two sets of twins.
Two sets of twins, yeah.
But I don't think he's really going to have to do that much work. He's busy footballing.
I don't know. He plays with his kids a lot. I see videos.
Yeah, he does.
You know, well, at least the videos he purports to, you
fine
know, puts out there.
Totally fine. But I wouldn't want two twins pregnancies. No, thank you.
That's a lot.
Wow. Yes, that's a lot of kids. Yeah. I've got three. I'm at max capacity.
Yeah.
Apple and Amazon stock are both trending because both had lower than expected third quarter earnings. Both companies say that rising costs of Amazon goods and delayed supply chains are what caused them to miss expectations. Although it's very hard to feel sorry for them, Amazon made $110.8 billion in revenue and Apple made $83.4 billion.
Is that gross or is that...
These are profits.
Yeah, wow. Profits.
Jeez. Yes.
And just to be clear, on Apple, you know, because I follow that company very closely and I study what they did, I was looking at the earnings last night, and look, they exceeded Mac expectations. So the sale of Macs
yes
through the roof.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even account the new, like, David, like the new M1 Macs or the new MacBook Pros that were just announced. Like, that's just at MacBook Air sales over the past year.
Yes.
And iPad sales through the roof. And their services, meaning iCloud, Apple Fitness, Apple TV Plus, that's double their Mac and iPad sales.
Yeah.
So they're doing pretty fine. They're doing okay.
They're all right. Yeah, we're not saying that was bad. They just missed expectations. Funny, in the chat, we're seeing how many people are saying, I have twins, I have twins, I had twins, wow, or I am a twin. And I don't want to say anything bad about having twins. I'm sure that's a wonderful blessing. But twice...
Right.
Twins
four
twice, right?
At the same time.
So that is fantastic. I love twins, but I personally do not want to ever be pregnant with twins. I'm just saying that. I have three.
Well,
maybe
I bet
if I had
he's...
zero and got pregnant with twins, I'd be happy, right?
Yeah.
He's so probably going to question ever trying that again. It's like, I don't know if I want six. So.
Right.
Nobody tries for twins, I guess, unless you are having in vitro, right? Usually.
Yeah
but if you're two for two, I think you would kind of maybe expect three for three.
And with Ronaldo being the kind of scorer that he is, he needs a better goalie, if you know what I mean.
Oh, my gosh. And is it Karen says she had a two-month-old and 11-month-old, two-year-old, 11-month-old, and a newborn. Oh, no, none of those were twins.
My dad had, or Art Sullivan says, my stepdad had three sets of triplets. Three
goodness
sets of triplets. I'm no math genius, but that sounds like nine kids.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
I know a guy who, his mom had three boys and went for the girl and got twin boys.
Wow.
Because she was going for the gender, so she got five boys instead of one girl. Wow. Coming up.
Wow. I'd be like, I'm a Gene Heap, first train on, got to get on it, first train on. I'd be like, be gone.
Five boys, destroying
every time
the house.
I went for my ultrasounds, I would tell the doctor, I ordered one. I want one baby in there. If you find two, I'm going to yell at you. So,
All right. Yeah. I'm only paying for one, so.
Okay. Super Mario Brothers Superstars is trending because the newest Mario installation of the game launched today for the Switch. Early reviews of the game are that it is quite good. This is very likely what the Morris children will be getting for Christmas.
Oh, right.
Uh-oh. Mario Hope they don't watch Superstars. The show.
They don't.
They better be in school. They better be in school.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And probably the digital version, too, so we won't have to worry about any supply chain, anything.
Yeah.
We've done this before where we just print it up. We're like, here you go. And then we buy it online. So,
At least it's not, at least you don't have to buy V-Bucks anymore, right?
Yeah.
No, I wish.
Yeah.
The case. What else is trending?
Okay, Katie Porter is trending. Now, we did already speak about her in the story about oil and gas, but I did want to play another video for you. She is a representative from Iowa. She was video conferencing. California?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Pretty sure. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I will double check that. I'm sorry. I have been known to misspeak about certain things. I try not to.
It's very rare.
Yes, because he's saying his wife is always right.
That's right. Yeah,
that's nice of you
to
say.
She's never wrong.
No, I sometimes do, and I will eat that. Nevertheless, she is a representative in the House of Representatives, and a video of her is going viral where she questioned the CEOs of big companies, BP, Chevron, ExxonMobil, Shell. It was House Oversight and Reforms Committee hearing about, and she was using all of these like food items to illustrate the actions of the oil and gas industry. We already showed you the one with the candy. I want to show you the one here with the bags of rice.
Mr. Summers, there are 7,700 permits unused. How many acres of public land are already leased by fossil fuel companies and not even used yet, just available or drilling whenever you decide?
Congresswoman, again, I think you have a fundamental misunderstanding as to how this process works and the time and resources.
Reclaiming my time. The answer is 13.9 million acres. To visualize how much land that is, if each grain of rice were 1 acre, that would be 479 pounds of rice. The American Petroleum Institute even opposed pausing more leasing on our lands. They even sued to stop it, because apparently this acreage wasn't enough. Mr. Worth, you serve on the American Petroleum Institute's Executive Committee. Do you support a pause on new oil and gas leases on federal land?
Congresswoman, access to resource in this country is essential to ensure the energy security of our country and
reclaiming my time. Mr. Lawler, do you support a pause?
Look, the rice is leaking.
The administration, on new oil and gas and leases. It's our hope that the pause ends soon. We think it's important to go
reclaiming
forward.
My time. Thank you for your answer. The answer there is no. Mr. Weiss, do you support a pause on new federal and gas leases?
She's no. Dumping rice.
Ms. Watkins, do you support a pause on new federal and gas leases?
No, I do not, because I think it's important.
You already have 13.9 million acres. This is equivalent to Maryland and New Jersey combined. How much more do you need? How much more acreage? You have two of our 50 states at a price that makes the Louisiana purchase look like a ripoff, and you're not even using it. What more do you need? Iowa, Colorado, Virginia? Our public land belongs to the American people, not to big oil. When you lobby and you sue so that you could take more of our public land, you're saying too much is never enough. The American people are tired of this charade.
Wow.
Okay.
Love it.
I did look it up. She's from Iowa, but you're right. She's a representative
from California.
Of California. I apologize.
Why aren't they putting her up for president? Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, good question. You, Ula Hula says, she's from California's 45th congressional district. They love her out there. Big fans of her. Yeah, she's California, so she is from Iowa.
She's from Iowa, but right. She does represent California beautifully, in my opinion.
She would shatter that glass ceiling. Like, why? Like,
I would love that. Could you imagine her on a stage? Like, if they put up Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis or somebody like that? I mean, she would eat their... I mean, she would... Oh, yeah.
She's like, Mr. Yes. Trump, look behind me. You'll see six women. Now, these women all have...
Right.
Right.
These women, do you recognize any of them? Because you should probably recognize them from... Anyway, yeah.
Now, I'm a Californian, so I'm going to summarize her videos. She's hella pissed.
Yeah, hella pissed. That's
she's
what
hella thing. Pissed. And you know what? I love it. So,
reclaiming my time. Okay, what...
I cede my time. That's the end of the trending topics for the day.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us for this extra long edition. We hope we brought you some value today. If we brought you any value, go ahead and subscribe. If you're already subscribed, then just, you know, smash that like button.
Thank you so much. It's been a great week. We wish you a safe holiday weekend if you celebrate Halloween or Samhain, the pagan holiday that Halloween was built around. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're into, do it safely and enjoy one another.
Absolutely. I'm trying to see if I can get, yeah, there we go. There we go. Enjoy.
What are we trying to do?
I was trying to get a shot of, oh, Grover decided to wake up at the last minute.
Sort of.
Grover, thanks for waking up, man. Thanks for waking up at the last second to say goodbye.
He's into heavy licking right now, you can tell.
Yeah, some heavy petting. All right, bye, everyone. We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone.